Earth, sky.
What we do is to explore things that are interesting. So a basic program is to find something that's interesting to us from the point of view of curiosity, understand how it works, see what it's good for, and then in some cases when we're lucky, we might be able to spin out at the end something that would be a small business, a startup that would start transferring the benefits of knowledge into a society in terms of solutions to problems.
You're listening to chemist George Whitesides of Harvard, and this is Earth Sky's Clear Voices for Science. Dr. Whitesides is the most influential chemist alive today, with more scientific citations in published work than anyone. He's co-founded a dozen companies worth over $20 billion. And behind his work, he says, is a desire to create simple solutions for difficult common problems, such as low-cost health diagnostics for developing countries like Rwanda. George Whitesides talked more about what it means to be a chemist today with Earth Sky's Jorge Salazar.
Dr. Whitesides, welcome to Earth Sky's Clear Voices for Science.
I'm very happy to be here.
What inspired you to study chemistry, and what was the science community like as a young scientist in the 50s and 60s?
Chemistry is a really terrifically interesting area because it's about the world that we can see and feel. So if you're curious, you want to know why leaves are green and why things are alive and why the paint on walls is white or red. And that's what chemistry does. So the original motivation was just that it was great fun to think about how the world worked. And in the 50s and 60s, when I started in that glacial time, chemistry had a pretty restricted view of what it did. That is, it made molecules, which are very small collections of atoms. And molecules are what makes up air and drugs and the molecules that go into polymers and paint and gasoline and all of that kind of thing. But really the purpose of chemistry was to make molecules. It's gotten to be a lot more expansive. It's now very interested very broadly in the question of what is life, and very interested very broadly in the question of what are materials and then other things as well. But it's a wonderful area because it brings you into contact with almost anything that you see and feel and taste and smell and talk to.
Would you tell us a little bit about some research that you're doing on something that you've described as soft robots? What's going on there?
Robots are really, really interesting as a subject and as a kind of technology. The core problem with robotics is that there are circumstances in which doing a job can be too dangerous for a person. It could be impractical for a person to be in that circumstance. The problem that needs to be done can be too complicated. An example is using robots to lift heavy panels in place and welding the body parts of an automobile. So most of the robots that you see have been developed either as part of manufacturing or sometimes for applications, let's say in the military, where you would like to not have people defusing a explosive device. You would like to have a machine doing the defusing. Now, most of these robots are either made to look a little bit like animals or people. That is to say, they are so-called hard robots. They have a skeleton and they have motors that run things that might be arms and legs, or sometimes they have treads, but the treads are fused then to something that looks like an arm. But if you think about the world around you, it's full of creatures that are butterflies and worms and octopi and starfish. And these are all creatures that don't have a hard internal skeleton. They have some different structure that holds them together. So we're very interested in putting together robots that are soft and look less like a dog and more like a starfish. And of course, the connection to chemistry in that is that these creatures are not made out of, these machines are not made out of metal and springs. They're basically made out of rubber and elastomers and things like that, as is the original creature. So the trick here is to find ways of putting together the material science of elastomers in such a fashion that when properly actuated, you can get behaviors crawling and jumping and moving through holes that begin to look like these soft things that we live with in the world. And we believe there'll be a whole range of applications in these from, to take two examples, surgery, to going through small holes in a collapsed building, which might be a disaster relief after an earthquake or something of that sort.
You've spoken on where the innovation, these meaningful changes, and the jobs in chemistry will come from in the years ahead in the United States. Tell us a little bit about what you found.
We now find ourselves in some economic difficulty with fewer jobs in the country. And the question is it because there are fewer needs? And if you think about it, that can't possibly be right, because we know we have this major problem of providing health care, albeit at lower cost. So how do we provide health care at lower cost? How do we manage carbon dioxide in the atmosphere? And how do we think about global stewardship? How do we use fuel more efficiently? I mean, all of these kinds of questions are critically important. How do we provide water for the world? And most of them are chemical jobs. So we're in this, to me, odd situation that we have an enormous range of talent in the field of chemistry and science in general that is in principle poised to solve problems. And we have the problems that need to be solved because they're everywhere. And why is it we don't have jobs? And that's a very complicated question, and the answers are very complicated. But basically, a short form answer is that the United States right now tends to emphasize the solution of problems that can be solved very quickly. And the solution to complicated scientific problems often takes a rather long period of time. So in my view, and many people's view, one of the things we want to think about is how do we encourage more innovation and the creation of more new jobs in the United States? So we've been working, we and many other people in the United States are working on trying to find ways of coupling more effectively people who want jobs, problems that need to be solved, and jobs that need to be created through innovation. And it's something the United States still does better than any other country. We just need to put it back on track now.
You've been listening to George Whitesides, the Flowers University Professor of Chemistry at Harvard University. This Earth Sky podcast is part of the Thanks to Chemistry series, produced in cooperation with the Chemical Heritage Foundation. Generous sponsorship support was provided by the BASF Corporation. Additional production support was provided by the Camille and Henry Dreyfus Foundation, DuPont, and ExxonMobil. I'm Deborah Bird. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.